On the Hub on Stage, how visible are women in the performing arts? If you're over 50, you might feel like that inside, not giving a damn. But women over 50 say, well, they often say that they become invisible, that the young stop seeing them. Well, two people who absolutely refuse to be invisible are Deborah Batten and Sue Broadway. They've both been making work for the stage for more than 50 years, and they're on stage together in a show called One and the Other. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
In all your visibility, you are pumping the air to Joan Jett there. You've handed me a beautiful postcard with two caricatures on it that look just like you do for your show, One and the Other. These are a good idea, aren't they?
Aren't they great?
To hand out a little picture with a information.
Yeah, we find them most effective when they're given personally to someone in their hand.
Yeah, when you're chatting and you say, I'm in a show. By the way, I just happen to have the publicity material right here. I reckon these would be good for authors as well to have. You know, when you're talking about your book, anything, anyone who's got a show, think about whether you've got the money to produce a little postcard size thing with an eye-catching picture on the front and all the deets on the back. So tell us about this One and the Other. What's the show that this is promoting?
Oh, it's a marvellous show about me and Deb and how marvellous we are at our age to be still doing what we love, which is circus and vaudeville and contemporary clowning.
Right. And this idea that women who are after a certain age become invisible, is that something you've experienced yourself, that sense that people aren't looking, or is that actually something other people say?
No, I definitely experienced it at a certain point. You know, it's the small things. It's standing at a bar and being overlooked by the person beside you who came up later, who's 20 years younger.
Right.
And it's just sort of, it's not a deliberate.
You mean people could actually apologise and say, oh, sorry, I didn't see you there.
Yes.
Yeah. It's as blatant as that.
And so it does become this thing where you notice it in those situations, and then you begin to notice how few women I'm seeing of my age on television or, you know, in on stage or being...
Having an opinion is mostly important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no one wants the opinions of the over 50s because they're reactionary and horrible or out of date. I mean, even radical views are radical in the wrong kind of way to other radicals, it seems to me. How did you two meet?
Well, that was in the early 90s. I was I answered an ad for Circus Oz to be a performer. And I was working at the time with Magpie Theatre in Adelaide. And so I just had this window of opportunity to be in Melbourne. So I rocked up to Circus Oz and said, you have to audition me now.
And what was your skill?
I was an all-rounder.
She was a gymnast.
That sounds like you weren't much good at anything. I mean,
I've been good at everything.
Oh, well, you could have been, I suppose. So what was some of the...
I definitely have a big history in gymnastics.
Right.
So tumbling and acrobatics was my main skill set. But I'd been doing quite a lot of work with Magpie Theatre in performance and mask work.
Oh. And she was funny and feisty, which is what I was looking for.
Well, funny in a circus is always good.
Yeah,
isn't
always
it?
Good.
If you can stand on your head and make people laugh,
yep.
Or do a double backflip and make people laugh,
yep.
That's always good. Now, why did you laugh when I said, how did you two meet? Is there some disagreement about how you met?
Well, there's a little bit of a disagreement because Deb claims that I said that she was in the reject pile, her biography was.
Oh.
And I can't remember saying that.
Yeah, but
that
she
too.
Would remember.
Yes.
The pain, the hurt.
Yeah.
Yes, but ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I submit that Deborah's testimony on this fact is to be preferred over Sue's lapse of
but
memory.
But I think we only rejected her because she wasn't available on the audition day. I made a special audition to see her because I was so impressed that she had the gall to walk into my office and insist on an audition.
Right. Well, there you go. There's a lesson in that. Be pushy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when did the two of you realise that you could be a double act?
About 5 years ago, I think. Mm. We started working together on an event we called The Classics, which was... a circus presented entirely by people in their 50s and older. And it involved quite a number of the original Circus Oz lineup, and a few other people put on a fantastic show at the Circus Oz Melbourne Spiegel tent.
That sounds marvellous. Mm. Can you still do the double backflip thing or whatever it was you were specialised in?
Or... I can still do the odd handstand and cartwheel and back handspring, yes.
Yeah, and people still laugh when you finish?
Yes.
Ta-da!
Yes, so this is a good ta-da.
Funny you just get better at. Just keep getting better at.
Yeah. A ta-da to die for.
Yes.
So you call this a performance memoir. Mm. What does that mean?
Well, we wanted to find a catchphrase that was catchy, so we caught it, didn't we? No.
You catched it.
Yeah, we caught it. It's a little bit of a performance memoir because it's based in our histories as performers, but we also segue into personal history as well.
Right. Segue is a good word, isn't it?
Oh, it's a marvellous word.
And I suppose with a memoir, you know, you can draw on various thematic ideas in a memoir as opposed to a sort of autobiography. We're not trying to tell our whole stories. We're sort of drawing on our performance histories.
Such as? What are some of the themes that you explore?
So some of the themes are Sue's history from vaudeville through to being a founding member of Circus Oz, through to being a director of Circus Oz. You know, so there's – and it's all performance. And I suppose for me there was a sense that I was a gymnast, and there's a performance element to being a gymnast.
Yeah, there certainly is.
And so to take that as part of my performance memoir history from gymnastics into theatre, into circus.
In fact, of all the forms of athletics, it's possibly the one which is most about putting on a show, isn't it? I mean, even when you're a gymnast, it's a show.
It absolutely is.
Whereas when you're sprinting, you're just trying to get to the other end as quick as you can.
Mm. Mm. Yes. The limitation is that you're working within a very strict code, whereas in the arts you're always trying to push against whatever the code is, whereas in the sporting environment you're trying to stay very much within that code.
Yes. And balance on that very small bar.
Yes.
But also the show's not dry at all. It's not like we get up and stand still and talk. We're also doing things and doing acrobatics and doing juggling, and we're presenting routines that are performative in their own right.
You're answering challenging ABC questions that haven't even been asked. I put it to you that this sounds like a very dry idea. I say my probing ABC way. All right, prove it isn't dry. So give us a bit.
Oh, a bit from the show?
Yeah, let me throw it out a challenge.
Okay. I was born into a vaudeville family. My real name is Susan Margaret MacDonald. Broadway was my mother's maiden name. I changed mine by deed poll in the 70s because I was a feminist. My father was furious or hurt. Sometimes it was hard to tell the difference. He came back from the Second World War angry and never really got over it. My grandfather, Alfred J. Broadway, was a magician and juggler, and I made my first appearance in his act at the age of 4, nearly 60 years ago. I would materialise magically out of a doll's house, tap dance down the front steps and sing, "I'm presenting you right now, baby, take a bow." So cute. Who would have thought that that little girl would grow up to be one of the founders of Circus Oz, an inventor of contemporary circus? My first professional job was in a traditional circus. I was one of the girls, 4 of us living in a 12-foot caravan. We woke up on more than one occasion to find the van surrounded by drunken tent boys who wanted in and would shake the caravan until they got their way or were frightened off by the bullwhip. The best thing about performing in the circus was riding an elephant. All trained elephants are female. The males are just too dangerous, too unpredictable. One day, my elephant, Minyak, took off round the ring, out the back door and across the circus lot. Luckily, I grabbed hold of the cable between the side poles and was left dangling in midair. The next day, Minyak and I were back in the ring together. I was more afraid of the drunken tent boys.
And what, wasn't dry at all, was it?
It's not dry, is it?
It might be dry on radio, but done live. I'm doing paper tearing and a torn and restored newspaper, if you know what that means.
There's a visual element.
There's a visual element, yes.
Lovely.
Yes, Sue creates a beautiful tree of newspaper just through tearing it, which she then balances on her nose whilst this story is taking place.
While riding an elephant.
We haven't got a real elephant, Michael, sadly.
La Mum is a small theatre. You can't fit an elephant even into the surrogate La Mama you're having to use at the moment. Was it tough being women at the time? I mean, we've talked about the toughness of being a certain age, but did you have to battle for your place in the theatre and performance and stage in the day, back in the day?
I think we're still battling, aren't we?
Okay, well, let's start with, you know, where yeah. we were and where we've come to.
But certainly we had to stand up and fight for our position as artistic directors. We've both been artistic directors of companies over our careers, and we really had to fight for that position, especially being acrobats and being short as well.
But I think there's, you know, when Sue formed Circus Oz, there were five women in the original group. I think you outnumbered the men almost, didn't you?
We didn't quite outnumber the men, but we tried.
But it was a politically motivated theatre, wasn't it?
And it was certainly feminist in its intention. Yeah. So we were protected and energised by that definition of ourselves as women in the world in those days.
When you look back on the road that you've travelled, do you feel as though gains have been made, that the feminists who've gone before you have won ground, have blazed a trail?
I feel like there's been spikes and troughs, you know. It feels like there's changes that happen, and I think, oh, it's great. It's become easier. And then you'll suddenly realise that, oh, no, it hasn't. There was just a little moment in time, or perhaps I was experiencing a great moment in my life, but then I turn around and see some statistics that will remind me that it's not true. So it's kind of been a bit of a up and down sort of journey.
So in the show, what do we see?
We see acrobatics and circus and juggling and vaudeville and all manner of fantastic clowning routines. And at the same time, we talk about what it is to be a feminist in the world today.
Right.
We also see us get quite dark in some of the elements where we are drawing on the sort of the animal woman that is kind of buried and pushed down.
So, the inner Joan Jett.
Yes, our inner Joan Jett also comes out during the show. So it's framed with a sort of lighthearted circus and vaudeville, but there is a subtext that is quite deep and much more pointing at the difficulties of being a woman in the world.
On the Hub on Stage, you're meeting Sue Broadway and Deborah Batten, and their show is called One and the Other at La Mama Theatre. Now, stay with me, if you will, as we're joined from Sydney by Tara Clark, who's the General Manager and Producer of Festival Fatale, a women's theatre festival taking place at the wonderful Eternity Theatre in Darlinghurst. G'day, Tara.
Hi.
This is the second time we've had a Festival Fatale. What's it all about?
Well, Festival Fatale was inaugurated back in 2016 really as a direct response to a lack of gender parity seen on Australian stages, particularly One Theatre's 2016 season announcement that included only one woman, director or playwright. So Festival Fatale is really about putting women artists and women's stories in the spotlight.
Well, that theatre you haven't named, I will name. It was Darlinghurst Theatre Company.
It was.
Back in 2016, but they've mended their ways.
They have. You know, I think they've shown tremendous leadership. Not only did they partner with WITS, the organisation that I'm from, to support Festival Fatale, but they also implemented a gender parity policy in their programming, which is essentially just a 30-word statement that says they make a commitment to achieving gender parity across their entire programming, both on stage and back of house, which is incredible.
What does gender parity mean? I mean, it's one of those phrases that sounds a bit abstract. What does it mean?
Look, it's a bit textbook. I know it's very dry, but gender parity basically just means equal representation. So 50-50.
Of men and women.
Correct, yeah.
On stage, backstage, I mean, at every level of making theatre.
That's it, yeah. And in leadership as well. You know, I think one of the areas of arts that's often overlooked is leadership. And I think that's where it's most important, more often than not. Yeah, so that's essentially what gender parity means for theatre.
Where do you see the gaps? I mean, if you think about the profile given to female actors, or some people would say actresses, some actors prefer actresses, we increasingly see female playwrights. There are heaps of female stage managers. Where do you see the gaps?
Everywhere, really, in a nutshell. I mean, when I think back to my experience training, so I trained as an actor, and by my count, going into drama school training, I'd say that women auditioning for drama school were outnumbering the males 3-1, maybe 4-1 for some schools. Yet the year I graduated, there was only one female artistic director of a main stage theatre company in Sydney, and she held her position jointly with a male. So leadership, absolutely. Artistic directors are definitely lacking in women. The interest is there. And this is the thing that's most mind-boggling, is that I know there are plenty of female actors, female writers, female directors, female stage managers, lighting and sound designers. They're there. It's just that they're not getting the work.
And why is that? I mean, you would think that the theatre would be a site of progressive attitudes.
You would think that, wouldn't you? You know, it's funny. I often say when I was a kid, I wanted to become a mechanic. And my dad said, no, don't do that. That's a very male-dominated industry. So I thought, well, I'll become a theatre maker instead. And little did I know, because it seems to be just as male-dominated as the mechanics business would have been. But look, it's... I'm
not sure about that one, Tara. I think when I take my car down to the garage, it's a bit more blokey down at the garage than it is over at the Melbourne Theatre Company. But
quite possibly. I do exaggerate. But no, look, I think a lot of the positions are tightly held. And, you know, talking to Glenn Terry, who's the artistic director of the Darlinghurst Theatre Company, who, you know, have partnered with us for Festival Fatale, he said that when the Darlinghurst Theatre Company implemented their gender parity policy and put the call out for expressions of interest for their 2017 season, the number of women making submissions went through the roof. So Darlinghurst Theatre Company works on an artist submission basis. They don't curate in-house. They put a call out to the arts community, and if you're a writer, a director, a playwright, an actor, it doesn't matter, you can make a submission to them and they will curate their season based on the artist's submissions. And when they implemented their gender parity policy, the number of women who put in submissions went through the roof. And I just think for so long women have been told that they can't, they've not been given the opportunities, they've applied for opportunities and seen them go to the same male faces that we're used to seeing, that that in many ways they just got a bit demoralised and stopped making submissions. But the moment they're invited, you know, the number of women submitting, just it went through the roof. And I think the interest is definitely there. The artists are there. And again, talking to Glenn, you know, he'll tell you that the suggestion that there aren't women out there to fill those roles is just absolute rubbish.
Deborah Batten and Sue Broadway, let's bring you back in here. Deborah, you were the artistic director of Legs on the Wall for 13 years, the physical theatre company. You won two Helpman Awards while you were there. Did you have to fight particularly hard to justify your leadership as a woman, I mean?
I didn't really feel that I did. I felt like in circus, I think because of Circus Oz, this idea of gender parity has been there since the 70s. In circus and physical theatre, and that feels like it's the culture of circus and physical theatre,
right,
as opposed perhaps to mainstream theatre. So I felt quite validated there.
So circus is ground that's been won.
In some ways, I think some ground has been lost more recently. and I'd have to say in some ways things have gone a little bit backwards in that many of our theatre groups or small circus groups are tending to be three men, one woman. The woman is the lightweight flyer, you know, so a kind of stereotypical role for a woman.
I have thought about this myself too. When I go to the circus, you see hefty blokes sort of chucking a girl in the air and she twists and they fall. I always find it a bit disturbing, the sort of handling of a woman in this way. Yeah. I can see it's entertaining and skillful, but it does seem a bit old-fashioned.
And it is old-fashioned, and there's a lot of women out there who are 6 foot tall and strapping, and they deserve a place in circus, and in fact they have. In contemporary circus, you see a lot of really strong women doing fantastic things. I just have to say, though, that it's both dispiriting and inspiring, the current Me Too movement, and to see young women standing up and demanding their rights in theatre, because we were there in the 70s when it first, you know, There was a start then made, which, as Deb was saying before, it's gone backwards a bit, forwards a bit, backwards a bit, forwards a bit. But in the end, I think we are making progress, which is great to see.
You know, I'm always a little bit wary when people say nothing has improved, because in any area of social development or social agitation, because it seems to me it does devalue the struggles that people have done and made in the generations before you. You know, if you went back to the 1890s, there's a lot about society that's pretty unpalatable then.
Yes.
You know, battles that have been won by people of goodwill.
Yes.
So without wanting to diminish the struggles that remain to make society a fair and juster place, I think we often just overlook how hard it was for the people who went before.
Acknowledge the past and look to the future.
Well, there's a slogan.
And it is true that Circus Oz created parity in the 70s, and it still exists today in that company. And that has forged a culture in circus.
Right.
Generally speaking. And so when we see that changing to that, as you were talking about, the three men throwing one woman around, us older people are a little bit like, that's annoying, actually.
Yes.
You know, that's not our culture in Australian circus.
I'm an older person who's annoyed by that too. Mm. I think, what?
Well, I created another group called A Good Catch, and we're three women of different generations and we throw each other around.
That could have its own perils.
It does.
Tara, let's talk about the festival briefly. What are we in for?
Look, it's a jam-packed day of theatre, so it incorporates both fully realised productions as well as moved readings of new works. So we kick off the morning with a fantastic new play by an Indigenous playwright, Phoebe Grainer, and Papua New Guinean playwright, Wendy Mocha, and it's called Djelbu Merry. It's lyrical, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous. I highly recommend it. Then we've got a theatre company from Western Australia coming all the way over to produce a work called Sparrow, and that's the story of Molly Skinner, who I don't know if many people listening will know who Molly is. She's often been relegated to the footnotes of history, but she was a Western Australian nurse and writer, and she was a collaborator of D.H. Lawrence, so that one's very exciting as well. A new play reading by a young Western Sydney playwright called Monica Elia, and her play Nana and Berta is the hilarious story of two Assyrian grandmothers who decide to save their favourite soap star from being axed.
And Tara, as we say in show business, and so much more.
And so much more. So much more. There's a huge lineup.
Thank you to all three of you for coming in. It's been a joy.
Thank you.
Sue Broadway and Deborah Batten. You can see their show, One and the Other, which is at the La Mama Courthouse in Melbourne until the 28th of October. And Tara Clark runs the Festival Fatale. That's happening all day at the Eternity Playhouse in Sydney on Saturday, the 27th of October. Two stage readings, three full productions, lots of ticket options for that one. You'll find a link to all the details of both those shows on our website. I'm Michael Cathcart, and this is The Hub on Stage.